At Payments Canada, we are modernizing the future of payments in this country. In doing so, we spend time discussing the opportunities and challenges, as being modern is more than just about technology and infrastructure. Being modern also means supporting and advancing a diverse workforce, which we are constantly striving to do. We are seeing a dramatic increase of female leaders in organizations around the world, from law, academia, to medicine. However, there is still much work to be done, especially in finance and technology, which simply has not kept pace with other professions and continues to struggle with attracting and supporting a diverse workforce. Today, on International Women's Day, we're bringing together three accomplished women who are disruptors in the payments industry to hear about the role women are playing in the evolution of payments, how the payments industry is being shaped by visionary women, and what the future holds. They will also walk us through some of the challenges and obstacles they faced, and that women continue to face in the financial industry, and to talk about solutions. Hello, my name is Justin Farabee, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Payments Canada and your guide on the PayPod podcast, which examines all aspects of Canada's ambitious payments modernization mission. We're joined today by Elena Latani, Director of Banking and Capital Market Solutions at NanoPay, Jennifer Tramontana, President and Founder at the Fletcher Group, and Shamina Jawani, Senior Vice President of Business Development at Ascendant FX. Thanks for joining me today on the PayPod. Starting off, tell me a bit about yourself and how you are contributing to the disruptive change happening in the industry. Jennifer, let's start with you.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. I have been working in the prepaid market since 2005. It's about a $4 billion market in Canada, but this is really just the tip of the iceberg. We're experiencing kind of a second wave, I would say, with respect to prepaid and how it's going to be important to the payment system. So you may be familiar with prepaid cards, that had the preloaded funds. You could go out and use them, make sure you didn't get into debt, use gift cards, things of that nature. They still exist, and that's important, but prepaid is becoming more of a technological capability now. There's a lot of value to the end user, as we know, financial inclusion and universal acceptance by the card networks. But the next wave is going to come from its foundation for innovation. That's because fintechs are really choosing prepaid. It provides sort of a nimble way to design products that are both inexpensive and efficient. It's infrastructure light, so it's kind of low cost and flexible. And also it adheres to the current regulatory environment and the current rails, which are important. I know we're going to talk about the rails today, but it does work on the current ones. So that's why you're seeing companies you've probably seen like Stack, Koho, Paytm, and others that are, you know, building off this. This next wave of neobanks, or whatever we want to call them, love, you know, everything's being built off of prepaid. So we're going to see tons more of that, particularly as open banking comes in.
Wow, that's a lot in behind prepaid. Yeah. It's not your grandmother's prepaid card anymore, is it?
It's not at all. No. It really isn't. It is a tech capability. That's what it is. And it's behind all the cool stuff that you see out there.
I had no idea. Fantastic. Elena, how about you?
Hi, so I'm Elena. I came to Canada as an immigrant. I grew up in Soviet Union. I started with IBM and spent most of my time in technology. However, about 5 years ago, I moved into payments. And that area really, really excites me because, as mentioned before, there's a lot of opportunities in payments. Specifically in NanoPay, we are actually pushing the envelope. We are trying to envision and design the new generation of payment rails. So we are envisioning a future where payments are digital, seamless, and transparent to everyone, and especially important real time. NanoRail is our technology. It's a new generation ledger technology which delivers high level of visibility, performance, resilience. We also, through this technology, enable tokenization of money and issuance of digital central bank issued digital currency. Our technology offers latest cryptographic security, secure API, and also ISO 20022 standards. Today on this technology, we have two products, Connect, which is for business, to enable businesses to make payments, as well as Liquid, which enables next generation cash and liquidity solutions for treasurers. But interesting, what excites me the most is our work with central banks, payment operators, and banks around the world on new innovative payment solutions. I think that's where the future is, real time, digital, and that's what really excites me.
Wow, that's some ambitious things and a lot in there.
Yep.
Good for you. That sounds very exciting and very dynamic. Shamina, how about you?
Well, I'm probably going to echo a lot of what Elena says, because I'm also in the international payment space. And a lot of what she said rings true for us with the transparency of payments, with the ability to receive payments within seconds as opposed to the days that people are expecting. But just kind of backing up a little bit, I've been in this space for, a long time, since 2000. I did take a 5-year hiatus to work on a completely separate industry, which was very fun, but very taxing. I developed a real estate complex in Canmore, just outside of Banff, which was, again, totally different, but gave me some really great perspective on approaching any business. And I am a mother of 2 kids, 1.5 and 4, which is another full-time job, as you guys can all probably attest to. And I've been working with Ascend and FX for 5 years. So we are a fintech company, and I've worked in international payments, but where Ascendant is really different is on the technology capabilities. So what we're really doing is enabling technology to ensure that payments are executed way more effectively and efficiently than they have in the past. Everybody that's listening to this podcast is, hearing the words of blockchain and distributed ledger and open banking. And our job right now is really to take all of these concepts and apply them to international payments so that customers are seeing that level of transparency and that level of delivery in a way that is meaningful to them. Because right now, international payments are a disproportionate time taker in relation to all the other aspects of what they're doing. And it just doesn't make sense, and it doesn't have to be that way. So that's basically what our premise is.
Fantastic. So why payments? Was there a calling that said payments? Did you stumble across it? Did somebody push you into it? Why payments?
So I'll say that it was completely by fluke. I started my career going, I don't know where I want to be. And I started at Thomas Cook Financial Services. And it was a very modern organization. And they were pushing the envelope at the time because the internet was just coming out, and they'd come out with an online platform. But it was dial-up internet, just to date myself a little bit. Payments for me has always been exciting because it's always changing and there's always opportunity, whether it's a new market or a new product, a new way of getting a payment there. It's been just revolutionized in the time that I've been here, and it's continuing to, reinvent itself. So I think it just keeps me interested, to be quite honest.
Well, I guess for me, it was actually blockchain. So I started to get interested in blockchain about 5 or 6 years ago. And with Bitcoin, it started to make people think, how does it revolutionizes the payments and the industry as a whole. So being then back in IBM, I worked with some of the initial customers to see how can we apply to the financial services. Is it actually applicable? And if it is, what it means, right? And then I moved to TD Bank and continued doing that from within a bank to seeing how we can apply to Nostra was reconciliation. Can we issue central bank currency, so Project Jasper. So, and with that, I got to understand the pain points in payments and what actually makes it hard. And it turns out it's not just a technology problem.
it's big, it's complex, it involves lots of people.
It's a lot of operational issues that you need to resolve to ensure that payments are successful, because you are talking about large amount of money moving through the country. So that's how I got involved, and it stick.
So you are all very accomplished in your field, and you have worked your way from an introduction to payments or into whatever industry you got into to here. What did it take to get here?
That's such a broad, it's such a broad question of what did it take to get here. I think, first of all, what's always going to be important and, legitimate in any industry, but particularly one that involves technology and innovation, is being able to see what's in front of you, being able to sort of like see and understand that this is something worth focusing on and how to sort of put the building blocks together of where this might go. And then where do you fit within that? And that's always been exciting in payments, as was just said, because it's like a never ending, process. It's been a little different for me getting into payments because, I live in the U.S. now. I'm Canadian, but I live in the U.S. and my company has serviced mainly U.S. companies, some Canadian, but for us back in like 2005 when this started, payments was about, or at least, you know, prepaid payments was about helping this large class of underbanked citizens have more power and empowerment with their money. And that has, you know, we've made huge strides over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years with that. And now you're seeing how that can change internationally, how this can really, like, digital transparent money movement can absolutely, you know, change lives, bring people out of poverty in ways that we had never expected before. So I think being able to sort of like put pieces together and think ahead, like, you know, keeps you excited and interested. And then making sure that you surround yourself with great people and mentors and businesses and companies who are thoughtful contributors to that industry. And what I mean by thoughtful contributors is, you know, particularly again in technology and in financial services, there are lots of great entrepreneurs and people, you know, spewing wonderful ideas, and it's very exciting and they get lots of glitzy headlines. And sometimes that is, you know, totally warranted and accurate. And other times it's people spinning a yarn. So you have to really, you know, make sure that you know your stuff and you surround yourself with people who are great, big forward thinkers, but are also really thoughtful, measured, prepared, understand what they're talking about.
And I'm just going to add to that, because I completely agree with that. But I think it's also about focus, right? So you can get swayed in a whole bunch of different directions. Yeah. And so, you know, like you said, you have so many thought leaders on so many different topics. And if you let yourself, you could get swayed from one end of the spectrum to the other. And so I think a lot of success comes from those who have focus, that are able to adapt, but that know what the end game is and map that out. And I think that that's something that's so crucial that some of those companies that aren't around 3 or 4 or 5 years later struggle with.
For me personally, it was taking on new opportunities. I think sometimes you feel like you might not be completely ready. But I think it's important, if you feel in your gut that this is something you want to do, go ahead and do it. Don't say no to the opportunity that you think is gonna either propel you or just bring something, take you to the next level, make you understand or learn new things. I think it's also believing in yourself, right? You believe in yourself, take new opportunities. I think those things are important as you progress.
Do you guys still think that's an issue with women, or are we overcoming that? Like, that's a very typical, you know, state of affairs, that they say that women wait until they really feel like they can do something before they go forward. Whereas, you know, men just, you know, don't care. They're like, I'll figure it out on the fly. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that's getting better?
You know, what's funny is Elena and I were just a part of Rise Up at Money 2020, mm-hmm. the Women's Accelerator. And one of the presenters had read that, you know, when you see a job posting, a woman needs to make sure that they fulfill at least 80% of those criteria before they apply. The man, I think, was 20%. And, you know, and she joked about it, saying, well, if they like the company, they're going to apply. And, you know, for myself, my husband's like that. Oh, I like the company, I'm going to apply. What's the worst that can happen? They'll say no. And I'm going, you're going to apply for that? You don't have any of this. Like, but it's just, you know, I do think that that's still there. I think that for myself, it's helped when I've had women or male, to be honest, it doesn't matter, who push me to say, well, you know what, it's all about aptitude and it's about ability, and you can figure it out. And I think that's what that experience outside of the payments industry taught me, is I knew nothing about real estate or running a hotel. You figure it out because you have aptitude and you have a great attitude to do it. So I do think that it's getting better because we have more people maybe pushing us, but I still think that that's innate in us and we have to get out of our comfort zone to get there.
Interesting. So there have been changes. So you're saying that is it true anymore? So you've definitely referred to some changes. What are the changes?
Well, it seems we talk about it more. I just don't know if we've like made the strides. I don't know. I'm kind of curious. I just am curious what other people think. I mean, I try to, like, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I try to think about, you know, when she's, you know, in university, or, you know, 10 years from now, and she's like just out of university and starting her first career, you know, is she going to, you know, hold herself back, or will we have had enough dialogue about this and instilled these kind of like values in our daughters that like our mothers maybe didn't in us, just because like nobody talked about it or worried about it or thought about it then. So I'm just not sure if we're there yet, or it's going to be kind of this like this next wave. So I don't know.
So you've all kind of alluded to the idea of navigating in the payments space. It's dynamic, always changing. Things are happening. You're talking about the skill of navigating, which requires seeing the path and then, you know, making a plan for yourself, getting the support you need and building your own confidence to get through it. You've been successful at that. When you look at fintech generally, do you see this sector being different or creating opportunities differently in the past? Or is it like any industry in terms of the opportunities and the challenge for women?
Okay, I personally think that yes, because I think the fintech, I think it creates opportunities because we can start building culture from the beginning. It's mm-hmm. much harder when you're a large corporation to actually instill changes. It requires much more effort versus in fintechs, usually it's small organizations. It's usually, you know, younger in spirit and willing to be more agile and accept the change. So like an example, what I'm seeing at NanoPay, leadership is, you know, looking at a diversity, making sure that we're inclusive and they talk about it openly, we discuss it, and we are making sure that we apply this at the core as we are building the company. So I think, yes, fintechs definitely bring a new opportunity, but I think also it's a research which coming out, which helps also to acknowledge that there is some discrepancy, right? There is still a lot of senior white male at the senior leadership roles in financial services, and there is not as much diversity, both gender and color and race, at executive leadership roles. And I think that research definitely helps. I recently looked at the McKinsey & Company. They came back with in 2018, they published a research which they reconfirmed some of the findings they found 3 years ago. And those findings were basically that diverse company that outperform, especially when the diversity at executive leadership or senior leadership roles.
I agree with you in the sense that we can get women in because we are smaller organizations typically. But I also think that some of the smaller fintechs struggle with the resources. And so when you talk about diversity, I think it's great that NanoPay is doing that. But I think a lot of the small companies are going, you know what, we're operating at rapid speed. We need to get good people in, and they're not paying attention to what they're putting in job postings. They're not paying attention to, you know, the language or, you know, even something as simple as covering a name up on a resume so that they are being truly unbiased when they're hiring. These are small things, but when you're small and you're resource challenged, I don't know that they're fully engaging in some of these to change this. I mean, you know, you hear that 50% of, you know, entry level or lower level are women. Like we are represented in that. It's when we go up to the executive level, that number drops to 15%. And so I think from a fintech perspective, you know, I think that the opportunities are there, but we need to kind of drill deeper as to why we're seeing that drop off from that 50% to the 15%. Is it because the opportunity isn't there? Is it because, you know, with fintech companies, there isn't, you know, all of a sudden an extra spot at the table? So those five people that started the company stay in that company in that space. I'm not sure what that looks like, but those are the questions that go through my mind when we talk about the opportunity for women and is there increased opportunity from a fintech perspective?
Yeah, there's two big problems in fintech. One, we don't have enough women running publicly traded companies. The few that are around, there, you know, there's very few women who are represented. Talbot Roche at Blackhawk Network is a great example of one, but there's just not many. And then secondly, we know that women don't receive VC and private equity funding to the same level that men do. And so you bring up the whole issue of we've got the worker bees, but in terms of, like, you know, starting her own venture and going out with an entire team, you know, my company has a 100% female executive leadership team. We've never tried to raise money, but I wonder what, you know, would happen in that scenario, just given the statistics that we know about that. So those are two areas that we really, really have to do better. I often think about the question you just posed about, like, what happens in the middle, right? Like, what do we lose women at some point? Do they lose opportunities? Like, how does that happen? I mean, I've got a couple of, you know, thoughts around that. I'd love to hear what you guys think. So one, at least for me living in the States, we know that there are major structural problems that force women out of the workforce when they have kids. It's hard to get back in, you know, all that kind of stuff. Canada doesn't have that to the same extent. And when I'm in Canada, I'm always very, I'm excited to see a lot more diversity in general around the table than I see in the States, whether that's, you know, gender, ethnicity, whatever. I feel like there's definitely a lot more here. But we have a lot of structural problems that I think, you know, take sort of women off a track of an inability to deal with that. And so all of these kind of like mentoring and networking groups that are out there, like Women in Payments and WNET and, you know, others that are trying to make a difference there, I think, you know, can hopefully put us on a better path to kind of not drop out as our careers take off. But I would love to know what you guys think about that too.
I do think, you know, part of it is us not sometimes asking. I mean, for me personally, I was telling you before we started the podcast that I have a son that we adopted from Morocco. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have dreamt to go to my boss and say, look, I'm planning to do this. I'd like to work from there, or I'd like to know what that looks like from your perspective. I would have just said, I have to take a leave and I'm going to have to deal with how I re-enter and what position that looks like. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I from some of the conversations that I've had with other people that kind of gave you that confidence to walk into your boss's office and say, look, I'm doing a lot. I'd like to continue. We have a great trajectory right now. Can I work from there? You know, I'll put in the same hours that I'm doing here. It's going to be later for me, but I can manage it. And that's what we ended up doing for 6 months, right? So I think that we have to change maybe some of those boundaries that were traditionally, and some of it is with us, right? In my head, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have even thought to ask that question. And I think we need to understand what is it that we can do to help with the balance questions. But I'm also seeing a lot of men now that are asking for, you know, I need to leave at 4 because I have to do the daycare pickup. And I think that hopefully as time goes on, we'll see more and more of that and it will become a lot more acceptable. And I put that in quotation marks, mm-hmm. Because that is the way. I mean, that is the way of the future in my mind. I do think it's on a lot of us to start asking those questions is instead of just taking that leave and not knowing what you're going to do when you come back, what does it look like? And maybe we can structure, is it 2 days a week that I come back? Is it, you know, part-time? Can I work from home 3 days a week? Like, what does that look like? So that we are continuously making that impact and moving our careers forward without having to sacrifice it 100% when we have the family.
Yeah, and I think this is a difficult question, is again to answer, right? I also think about it a lot because in previously I've been always thought maybe it's a pipeline issue, right? We always talk about it's a pipeline issue. We don't have enough women or girls in tech or, you know, math or sciences, and that's why that issue. But when we actually look at the workforce, there's a lot of girls entering it. As you pointed out, at some point they start dropping off. So from a personal experience, again, I have 3 kids now, and there some of them are oldest is almost 13 now, so growing up. But I felt that I personally made a conscious choice to almost like pause. I took interesting roles, but not necessarily strategic roles to make me to become a leader, because I knew that I felt like I wanted to spend more time and have more balanced time in my life when the kids were younger. So I think it's important though for women like myself that now, a couple of years ago, I realized, okay, I want to come back. I want to take those strategic roles. I want to do exciting and interesting and challenging roles. So it's important that companies realize it and give opportunities and watch for those women who are eager to come back and jump back and on a, you know, and lead.
Yeah. I like what you're saying, that there's challenges you faced in reaching or achieving the accomplishments you've set out, and you're turning your mind somewhat to how do I create opportunity for the next and for others too, so that they don't have to go through the same and they can find their way through. Who were your role models and what role did they play in your journey?
So that's a tough question because role models pretty much didn't really exist. I was in technology, there is not too many. But in the recent years, I've met several women in Canada who are, you know, shining and driving and innovative. And those for me became my role models. And most of them are actually younger than me, but they are so driven, so so bright and so smart. So some of them, which I really would like to mention, are Bianca Lopez. So she's a serial entrepreneur. She's identity influencer, speaker, and she just launched her new company, Tail. So she's focusing on building digital content stories and transforming information to knowledge. There is also Lucia Gallardo. We met her at Rise Up, right? So she's a founder of Emerge, and she's focused on addressing sustainability development goals that UN set. So she's using emerging technology to address some of the problems with refugee resettlement. How do you ensure that refugees don't become a problem, but actually, you know, can be resettled successfully in our countries? So she's about to launch a product soon, so which is kind of cool. And also here in Canada, we have Michelle Bale, who is recently got a Rising Star Under 40 Award from Payments Canada, as well as building new payments systems, building driving innovation in payments. So I think as I grow in my career, is I work with many people, I meet many of those young, exciting, and interesting people that change and influence me.
I mean, Lucia is definitely a force to be reckoned with when you look at her work with refugees, but on a more sort of surface level, Sally Krawcheck is one of those women that, you know, is amazing. She has done so many breakthrough, so many different career moves that have been breakthrough from a women's perspective. But more importantly, she's now got this audience and she's got this voice for all of us. And so she was just on the Today Show with Trevor Noah talking about the differences between men and women. And I'm going, holy crap. And maybe I'm not allowed to say that on a podcast, but, you know,
we said a lot worse.
I did refrain, if that's any consolation. But, you know, she's talking to Trevor Noah on mainstream TV about the differences between men and women leaders. And it was phenomenally inspiring to me to have someone like that on mainstream TV. And she's, you know, she's the co-founder of Elevest, which is a digital financial advisor tailored for women. Because as investors, we have a totally different profile than men. And she's made that a business. So I've heard her speak, and I think she's profoundly inspirational. But she talks the talk, and she, you know, really is a great role model for me now. Growing up, I don't know that I had a true role model that I would look up to. I think, you know, my parents were immigrants, so I saw how hard they worked, and I saw the opportunities that they took on with very little resource. So I think that's always played for me. But from a women in payments perspective, Sally wins hands down.
Well, let me just, since we're just mentioning some people, I think there's just a couple more that I want to mention. One is, I think it's very important, you know, being a Payments Canada podcast, to mention your new board chair, Eileen Mercier. She is leading the payments modernization of Canada. And, you know, maybe not a household name to everybody, but really, you know, a woman is driving your entire, you know, process of moving into, you know, the next century. So I think that's really exciting that there's a woman at the helm of that here.
We agree completely. So you faced the new dynamic world of paytech. You had to navigate a lot yourself. There weren't role models. In many cases, you are the role models for the next generation that come in. And now as you're going, you're finding peers and others who are doing things that inspire you. What is the role of Rise Up in the US and Women in Payments in Canada and actually internationally in creating space for role models to emerge or connections to be built? How do you see that working, and how successful has that been?
For me, it's been like game changing. So I'm a lone woman on a senior management team at Ascendant, and we call it a tribe because it is this tribe of highly ambitious women that can relate to me like nobody else can in my sphere. So, you know, we're talking about everything from family balance to explain to me how this blockchain application works to, you know, I need a contact in this region, or there's a speaking opportunity. Does anybody want to take that? So it's become this tribe is honestly the best word for me to describe it. And it's been a career changer for me because it's really expanded my mind. It's given me a lot of confidence because only women that, you know, truly support you and truly understand you can give you. And I think from my perspective, you know, I wish that for everybody, every woman in this industry.
I think that we need to take Rise Up to the next level, right? Rise Up was 35 people in 2018 at Money 2020. And I certainly don't want to take anything away from it, but we should just sit there for a second and say it was 35 people, you know? Why was it not 3,000 people in 2019? And we've got to figure out where do we take it from here? From everyone I know who presented or participated said it was fantastic. And it's now, how do you scale it? Carol Grumberg from Amp Financial is now the president of WNET. So I know that that's, you know, really going to hopefully take things to the next level. But to your point, how do we take it from something like a micro event and group and really grow that beyond. But I thought it was incredible to at least see that people are starting to pay attention now. Now I notice at conferences, they're announcing, you know, we have 40% women speakers, you know, things of that nature that just people didn't think about before. And not that women were excluded, but they're digging deeper, right? Like one of the things that I would say to any man in this field, like how do you support women, is just, I would say, just dig that one layer deeper. You know, when you're looking for the speaker or the next employee, whatever it is, you know, you've got a network of a lot of folks and probably a lot of great accomplished men who have had a career trajectory that just like went straight up, you know, like this. Just dig that one, before you just go with that, just dig one level deeper and see if you can find other, you know, whether it's women or people, you know, people of, you know, diverse backgrounds and ethnicities who've maybe had some on and off for some reason in the past. Just do that one level and like give everybody that opportunity to try to succeed. Because there's a lot of gems that we just get lazy sometimes and just don't look beyond our kind of immediate circle. You find the answer, you just move on. So that's, you know, that's the one thing I think we could do better for sure.
I agree. And just to add to that, I think it's important that is a Rise Up program, and you're right, we need to scale this. But I think the whole experience was this amazing bonding time where you, if you had to repeat it, let's say you take any large organization, you can do the same thing. You can do half a day, get all women, senior leaders, junior in the room, and give them some learning, but also let them talk to each other. I think one of the most valuable experience we had actually when we sat down and shared our stories. That's where we realized we are all the same. Though there are some people from across the globe, right? Different countries, different experience, age group. There were some really young girls. There were some really, you know, senior people in the room as well. But everyone had similar experience. Everyone faced the same challenges. And through this talk, through this, you bond, you make new network, you make new connections. And then the key is to continue to grow it, give back. I think one of the key giveaway to me was that we didn't end it there, right? We continuously talk now. We try to help each other. And I think that's important, right? To speak and for each other and help.
So I think we should put Payments Canada on the spot and say to them that at the summit this year, you need to offer some sort of half day or part of the day where, you know, we could do a Rise Up type of situation. Women could, you know, meet with each other and start from there. So if we can do it at Money 2020, why can't we do it at the summit, right?
Done.
Great.
Excellent. And we'll help you do it.
Okay. Done. Well, I was going to say, and the follow-up is you got to help us do it. So there you go. We made a deal. Okay. First deal done on the podcast in history ever done right here just now.
Women are all action.
You're all about getting things done. Okay.
So the one thing I also want to add to this is two things that I've come across is the fact that, you know, there are different programs for senior leaders. I don't know that there's a lot of programs and ways for women in junior levels or entry levels to connect with each other, to see what that next step is, to talk about mentors and the importance of sponsors and mentors that we've all talked about. But I do think that that's a big gap that we need to address, because I don't want that number to go from 50% to 15%. And I think that's one of the ways we address that. And I think the second thing is about the cost. So a lot of these functions have, you know, a price tag attached to it. And when you are, you know, a fintech company with a limited budget or you're not making the big bank bucks that you wish you were making, you know, your resources become scarce. And are you really going to put $2,000 or $200 or even $50 in to create this network or to join this network? So, you know, I think we got to figure out what we can do for companies and for women that don't have the resources to maybe join and to afford a membership to some of these things. Because I think that those are the people that potentially could be your next leaders that just don't have access.
It's a great point. And that being excluded right at the very beginning is, doesn't give you a path up. It's a really, really great point. When you look now, putting your executive hats on, looking at the industry, what do you see the future of payments? Let's give it 10 years out. So we're 2019 now, 2029. I know it feels like an eternity. I don't even know if we can imagine that far. Give it a shot.
So I'd say if we're looking at 10 years, hopefully open banking has spread across the globe and is not just in a couple of centers, but is being properly executed across the globe, because that is going to open us all up to, you know, much more transparency in payments. It will give people better access to their own digital identity and owning their information more. And it will give rise to the best possible products and services that consumers want to consume, ensuring that they are like fair, transparent, secure, and, you know, make sense for what they need in their lives without all of these structural barriers and moats that exist right now that make that very difficult to happen.
Couldn't agree more. Open banking, open APIs is the key. However, the other aspect, as you pointed out, we pointed out before, is real-time rails. I think that it's happening in other jurisdictions. It's real in Europe. It's real in UK. Let's make it happen in Canada.
Here.
I think payments are going to be commoditized. They're going to be standardized. They're going to be just a part of something else, right? So we're going to have to innovate to say, well, payments are part of what we do, but everybody's offering payments and everybody's going to offer it in the same sort of manner. It's not going to be right now, you know, one company can charge $10 for a payment and one company can charge 50 cents for a payment, because it's all going to be the same. There's going to be standards. There's going to be, you know, instant payments. So, you know, I think all of our payment companies are really going to have to figure out what that next thing is to bring in the revenue and differentiate ourselves.
What do you think that thing is?
If I knew, I would be retired.
Well, you will know, and I'm sure you will take it. You'll see the opportunity.
I mean, I think there's a whole bunch of integration opportunities, right? There's different segments that have so many pain points to this day that, you know, you laugh at, that we've been doing things the same way for so long. And I think payment companies can attach themselves to so many different applications for various segments. And I think that's where some of the future revenue can come from. That's my secret that I'm going to share with you for right now.
All right. Well, thank you. So you each have cut your path through your career, and it has been challenging. And there are others who are trying to find their way and some who are going to travel your path. You've received some support more recently than in the past, but you have some support. For those who are now coming in behind you, for your last comment today, what would be the piece of advice you would give them?
I think the first thing I would say is, when you're in your junior, sort of just starting your career, you don't really think the female-male thing is a big deal. Like when I was in my 20s, I was like, I don't know what all this talk is about. Like, I have the same opportunities as the guy beside me. I'm in my 20s. I'm able to go and travel and do all of these things. And then in your 30s, you kind of go, oh, okay, I kind of see it. And I want to start my family. And yeah, I kind of get it. In your 40s, you're like, I want to advocate for every woman possible. And Sally Krawchuk said this to us. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly how I feel. And so my advice to the women that are starting their careers is, number one, fintech is great. There's tremendous opportunity for you if you want to take it. But get yourself a female mentor, get yourself a female network, because it becomes lonelier the higher you go. And so when you have that, I feel like that makes your ability to rise in this industry so much greater. And I think that that's something that people don't really take stock of until they're at that level. And I think the other thing I would say is, put yourself, like Elena said, in risky situations. That has paid off for me in those times where I'm like, I don't know why I'm taking this on. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Every single one of those situations has paid off in droves for me. So I think as women, we are less risk, we're very risk averse, you know, put yourself in those situations and take those leaps.
Wow. Excellent. So I think I think as women starting to get to mid positions, mid level, I would suggest trying to get a sponsor, because sponsorship is important. Sponsor someone, usually it could be male or female, but someone is in a senior leadership position who can pull you out of a shade, who could sometimes fight for you and speak, you know, at those levels where you don't yet have access to. And I think I like the concept of having your own personal board of directors. You want to start building a network of people you trust and you go to when you need advice, you need to run something by them. So start thinking about it and building this early enough, so when you get to the point where you actually need it, it's there and it's there for you to use. I think confidence is a key. And I think it's important to realize that even in a crisis, we will have some crises in our lives. There is always an opportunity. Look at it as something positive. You learn something of a crisis, you come out of it, and you learn something new.
So those were all great. I guess the one thing that I would add is I would tell someone sort of just starting their career, whether it's in payments or anywhere else, to really just own your power and think big. So even beyond confidence, like just instill, like we need to instill in our girls now that they're powerful, that they're smart, they're thoughtful, be prepared, know your stuff, you know, read things, but you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You don't have to be the absolute most knowledgeable. You don't have to be totally the most outgoing. But if you package all of that together and just really accept, you know, your own power for what it is, and to not really worry about am I the best in these areas, and go out and go for it. And then think bigger. I don't think that we spend any time telling girls to think big and be entrepreneurs. Like we're doing a good job now of saying like do STEM, because everybody knows this is going to be important, but we're just saying do STEM, like just get the skills, right? Nobody really talks to girls about, you know, go have the craziest idea, go try to raise money, go sell, you know, folks in Silicon Valley venture capital about your idea. That's what everybody else does. Nobody has all of the answers there. So go and think big and don't just think about these little steps in your career. Truly just always be thinking about, you know, doing something exciting and disruptive. Maybe you never do it, but if you think that way, it's going to pay off in terms of everything that you do within your career.
Wow. Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for sharing your stories and your experiences. Thank you for having done the things that you've done. And thank you for creating opportunity for others. This has been a valuable opportunity to learn about the exciting work women are leading on, to better understand what we are doing right, and more critical, how we can improve to support and advance female disruptors and become a modern industry. As always, the Pay Pod is available for download on your favorite podcast app or at payments.ca. Join the conversation using #modernpayments. Until next time, I'm your host, Justin Farabee.